next Sunday, Moody Men's Choir, I think, with that song. My goodness. And our children can be dismissed from the room to go downstairs for your time in children's church down there. It's always great to hear the voices and the pitter-patter of feet of young children. We always want young children in the church, the future. Do you ever stop and consider how large the world is? The improvements of transportation, especially the development of commercial airlines, I know has shrunk that perspective somewhat, but still the earth seems to be an immense place. You can drive for miles and miles, for example, just in western Ohio. And for us, when we make the trip out to eastern Pennsylvania to see our boys at college, the second half of the trip is always the one we dread because it just seems like forever as you drive through Pennsylvania. And it brings me to thinking back to our family vacation a few years ago when we went out west, far west, even to California. And you're talking about the states out there like Nevada and Arizona and Colorado and Wyoming. And they're just gigantic. You could fit two Pennsylvanias inside of those states, I think. Just immense territory as part of one country. Today, I think there are about 250 nations and or territories in the world, and close to 6,000 different languages spoken, not to mention the many thousands more individual dialects as part of those main languages, along with thousands more tribal affiliations among the nations. There's an estimated now 7+ billion people with hundreds of cities, now having over 1 million people in population each. Reflecting on this massive humanity causes me to be mindful of a couple things. Number one, how massive and awesome our God is. Isaiah 40 talks about this. And I want you to look at these verses on the screen from Isaiah 40, particularly verses 12, 15, and 17. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breath of his hand marked off the heavens, or who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Surely the nations are a drop in a bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they are but fine dust. Before him, all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. I mean, picture a drop in a bucket. The nations, the powerful, vast nations of the world, like nothing to God. Secondly, this truth reminds me of how small and insignificant my individual life seems to be in light of all these things. A natural question then would arise is, what is my part in the nation? In the world's nations? What are they in relation to me? I'm this a significant nothing. If they're nothing, what does that make me? Do I just live a wandering, purposeless life, lost in the massive humanity of the world? Well, no, there is a message of direction for me derived from God's dealings with the nations. And to see God's arrangement and his placement of the peoples of the world gives me clear indications of what course my life should take. So open your Bibles, please, to Genesis chapter 10. When you get there, never fear. Even though you find out that it's yet another genealogy. Oh, joy. A listing of families, tribes, and nations. And at first glance, again, it does not look like the stuff of which exciting exegetical ideas come from. But when we go to a closer look, there's much that needs to be explained. And hopefully when we attempt to do that today, the passages will make much more sense. I'm not going to be covering verse by verse. I'm not going to be attempting even to pronounce all the names. I would get half of them wrong, I'm sure, and that would be very tedious. But rather topically, that is, to bring out some of the emphases of the author. And then we'll consider then the definite paths laid out for us to choose from to apply to our lives. All right, so here we go. Number one, all the people of the world are part of God's plan to bless. Bless is a key word in this passage, just like it is in the total of the book of Genesis. God wants to bless. We've seen that from the beginning in the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve were there. That was God's plan and desire to bless mankind. That's remained the case even though man has made mistake after mistake after mistake and tried to ruin everything. And the movements and arrangements of the massive people groups of mankind are a part of God's specific design to especially bless his people. So we go to point A with a general observation here. First of all, the Table of Nations teaches the unity of all post-flood humanity. There is unity, just like what we saw from Adam and Eve in the garden. All come from one blood, from one pair, Noah and his wife now. So we're united by blood. We're united by origin. The nations recorded in chapter 10 are an outworking then of the previous section of chapter 9. And I want you to take a look at a couple of verses there. If you go to chapter 9, verse 1. It says, then God blessed Noah. This is after they got off the ark. And you see the key word, God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. We come on over to chapter 9, verses 18 and 19. The sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham was the father of Canaan. These were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over the earth. This has been revealed to us from the last and first verses of chapter 10. If you come on over then into chapter 10, you'll see the very predictions of chapter 9 fulfilled. This is the account of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Noah's sons who themselves had sons after the flood. And then you go to the very last verse of the chapter, and it virtually says the same thing. These are the clans of Noah's sons according to their lines of descent within their nations. From these, the nations spread out over the earth after the flood. So those two verses stand as basically brackets for the whole passage. And I wanted us to stop and take a look here at where we're at in the book of Genesis overall and the various sections of the book, or the toledotes. In the Hebrew word, the account of the heavens of the earth, the account of Adam, the account of Noah. Notice that we're at this part right here. And then we're going to jump to Shem, who is the father of the Israelites coming down through Terah, and Terah is the father of Abraham. All right, so this is the account of, or what happened to, or what became of, the families of the sons of Noah who populated and spread throughout the earth. The brotherhood of mankind is true. The unity of it. The sons of Noah should have mastered these great truths. That there is one God to where their lives bear record. There is one people of the earth. There is one truth. And there is only one salvation. But we've not remembered this, have we? We've made gods out of other things, as the Apostle Paul said in Romans 1, like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles, abandoning the one true God. Having lost in our knowledge of the one God, we've lost our awareness of the peoples of the earth as one people. Therefore, we've exalted ourselves and tried to exploit those who we consider less or inferior to us. We have abandoned belief in one truth. And now we seek a plurality of truth forms. And most tragic of all, we've lost sight of God's promises, God's promise to bring a deliverer from the curse, which goes all the way back to God's words to the first parents in Eden on the occasion of the fall. There is a basic unity. And yet, point B shows us this. The table teaches that all nations are divided by language, territory, and government. Mankind is united, but it is divided into different people groups. The nature of this genealogy is different from the one in chapter 5 and from the one coming up in chapter 11. Those are vertical. They go boom, 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 right down the family line with no variation. This passage is more horizontal, in a horizontal genealogy. They traced ancestry. This one traces tribal allegiances and affiliation. So it's more like a family tree. That doesn't go just boom, boom, boom down the list. It fans out and shows all the relationships of the people groups to each other. This is just the type of genealogy necessary for wars and treaties when people try to get together or they relate to one another. And naturally follows then Noah's words in chapter 9 of both cursing and blessing. Two key words reveal this horizontal relationship. You have the word sons or sons of. You'll see those words repeated throughout. And then if you have the King James, the word beget or begat or the father of. That puts the sons into relationships with each other. There's a time when liberal scholars used to take a passage like this and they would jump on it to discredit it. They don't try to understand the emphases that Moses is making here that he expresses through the words as they are. What he appears he's done is taken a skeletal geology, the sons of list, and then illuminated it with this begat or the father of sections. Okay? Today, even now, the most hostile of critics are inclined to acknowledge that this table, this geology, is extremely important and accurate. For example, William Foxwell Albright, rather early in his career, that is when he was still very much a liberal theologian, wrote this: the 10th chapter of Genesis stands absolutely alone in ancient literature, without a remote parallel, even among the Greeks, where we find the closest approach to a distribution of peoples in genealogical framework. The Table of Nations remains an astonishingly accurate document. Some critics try to say that these are not real people, they're not real individuals, just people groups. Well, from Genesis 6 to 9, we already know for sure that Shem, Ham, and Japheth were individuals, literally. We can also add that Canaan and Nimrod, who are mentioned in this list, were as well. And then you add the terms sons and father. Those refer to a literal, physical bearing of children, as well as the foundations of tribes and the establishment of cities. So with the rebirth of the human race, we have a real people who bear children from whom cities, nations, and tribal dependencies develop from their actual ancestors. So the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10 appears through the sons of Noah to fulfill the commission of 9 verse 1. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth again. But the unit continues into chapter 11, where we learn how it came about that they moved away from there. It was under divine judgment of a rebellious people. So this section also moves right back to the aspect of deterioration under the curse. But it's different from all the other previous stories of Genesis. You recall, if we go through Genesis chapter 3, the story of Adam and Eve, even Cain and Abel, even Lamech, there are always rays of hope in each of those episodes. Not so with chapter 10. We're left with the earth hopelessly scattered with people across the face of the earth in rebellion and confusion, warring with one another and with God. What will happen next? Moses is setting it up. What will happen next is that God will choose one man, Abraham, and out of the scattered masses of nations, he'll begin to build his own nation, through whom his channel of blessing will come. All right, then the third general lesson of the Table of Nations teaches us, point C, that all nations are under God's control. All this dispersion and arrangements of the peoples going on all across the globe is particularly designed by God to bring blessing into the world. Divine sovereignty, his providence, is no less shown here than it was in the creation accounts or the other stories. This point is symbolically emphasized in the passage by the numerical symmetry throughout the chapter. For example, the number 7. Remember when we were going through the creation count, we pointed that the importance of that number out? The number of perfection and or completion? Well, Japheth, and you can count them, had 7 sons. He also had 7 grandsons. Listen to verses 2 to 4. Ham through Cush and Ramah had a combined total of 7 grandsons and great-grandsons listed in verse 7 who would become 7 individual nations, all of Arabia. From Mitzrayim come 7 tribes. They're listed in verse 10. And a special note here you'll see in that verse that the Philistines, who are they? Israel's arch enemy for centuries to come in the promised land that they were about to enter. They would come from one of those tribes.